It is Thursday, May 23rd, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellum.
And I'm Christina Thomas. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. KUAF is supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of this region's history and culture.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, University of Arkansas system officials consider whether their campuses should allow authorized members of faculty and staff to carry handguns, plus what new health care legislation may or may not mean for local agencies providing health care in this region to those currently without insurance.
And the magic behind making a puppet horse seem real. I learned from the master puppeteers with the Tony Award-winning show War Horse.
First, Governor Mike Beebe is beginning the process of talking with potential candidates to become state treasurer. The person would fill the rest of the term of Martha Schaffner, who resigned Tuesday over accusations she took bribes from a bond broker. Spokesman Matt DeCampbell says ideally announcement will be made in the coming days.
The governor wants to appoint a treasurer soon and as quickly as possible, but at the same time, you want to be expeditious without being too hasty. You want to make sure you have the right person in there. The governor has said that he is looking for someone with some good managerial skills, obviously experience running an office that understands, obviously, the work of the office, but and also someone who's not overly political.
The person also would not be allowed to run for the treasurer's position at the end of the term in 2015. Governor Beebe has already spoken with some candidates for the position, but would not name who they are. Meanwhile, Steele Stevens, the security salesman who handled the deals with Schaffner's office that led to the investigation, has stepped down from his position with St. Bernard Financial Services of Russellville. The chief executive of the firm told the Arkansas Times that Stevens did not give a reason for his resignation and that it was voluntary.
Disaster relief operations are already well underway in Shawnee and Moore, Oklahoma. Bridget Williams, Public Information Director for the Red Cross of Arkansas, says the American Red Cross has been on the ground in Oklahoma since Sunday, when the EF4 tornado struck Shawnee. Since then, images of the destruction may give some the urge to help. Williams says the best way to assist with relief operations is to donate money.
They can text Red Cross to 90999. They can call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit us at redcross.org. And the reason we ask people to do that is because that enables us to purchase immediate supplies that are needed. We have the power, as you can imagine, of buying in mass quantity so we can really stretch the dollars that they donate. I know that a lot of people are seeing the devastation on TV. They want to get together with friends and load up trucks and go. We respectfully ask them not to do that. The city of Moore has asked people not to come right now. They have plenty of volunteers on the ground as it is.
Williams says the cleanup and relief efforts in Oklahoma will be long term, and that people who want to donate goods instead of money should wait a few weeks until the actual needs of disaster victims are assessed.
But right now, for people to want to take clothing and furniture, first of all, people have no housing and they have no place to put any furniture. And with the clothing, there is not a system set up to sort, size, clean, and do whatever needs to be done. So that's just adding more work that is not the priority right now on the folks who are trying to do the job at hand.
Partnerships with companies such as Walmart and Tyson Foods allow the Red Cross to have more buying power when it comes to disaster relief operations. In addition, Williams says the Red Cross tries to spend donated money locally in the areas that are affected as a way of helping bolster the economies that are stricken by natural disasters.
A new peer review study published this month in the online edition of Applied Geochemistry suggests that shale gas drilling in Arkansas is not contaminating groundwater. The study resulted from collaborative research conducted by scientists at Duke University, which provided water quality analysis, working with USGS Arkansas Water Science Center, the University of Arkansas, and the Arkansas Water Resource Center. Water samples were taken in the summer of 2011 from 127 private shallow wells and later from six deep water reservoirs in Faulkner and Van Buren counties, where shale gas drilling is concentrated, to test for chlorides and methane commonly found in drilling fluids. Tim Cressy is water quality specialist with the U.S. Geological Survey.
So to verify the results of the first study, where we just looked at kind of geochemical evolution of that shallow groundwater used for drinking water in domestic wells, we compared it to these deeper waters using some fingerprinting techniques by the use of isotopes such as boron, oxygen, hydrogen, radium, strontium, but different isotopes that are just good fingerprinting techniques that allow us to compare water sources to see if there's any mixing between the waters.
Scientists found mostly naturally occurring methane from biological activity rather than industrial drilling. Duke scientists are also conducting water quality studies in northeastern Pennsylvania, where they found methane contamination from drilling fluids. But in Arkansas, the hydrogeology appears to provide some barrier.
Those waters were distinct. We saw no evidence that any of those flowback waters mixed with the shallow waters based on comparison of the chemistry of those waters to the chemistry of the shallow water.
The research findings will serve as a baseline for future groundwater sample.
Researchers at the University of Central Arkansas have completed a study showing that the digital divide between younger and older generations is beginning to narrow. Associate Professor Mark McMurtry says in addition to being the most overlooked and affluent consumer market, seniors are finding social media helpful for their own personal enrichment.
You know, if grandma can be a Facebook friend to their granddaughter, I mean, what a great way for them to be in touch, to not have that divide of, well, you never call your grandma, or, you know, or that sort of thing. Hey, grandma's on Facebook. So, you know, we see just a lot of positives emanating from that.
McMurtry says the growing presence of seniors online opens the door for hardware and software developers to create programs designed for the needs and interests of seniors. The University Library Special Collections has launched a digital exhibit, available online, that celebrates environmentalism in the natural state. 40, 50, 100, Arkansas's natural environment, commemorates the 40th anniversary of the Buffalo River's designation as a natural river, the 50th anniversary of the founding of the Ozark Society Environmental Conservation Group, and the 100th anniversary of the birth of Neil Compton, founder of the Ozark Society. The digital exhibit includes several photos of Bentonville physician Neil Compton, a letter from Governor Orville Faubus to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers opposing dam projects at Gilbert and Lone Rock, and posters created by the Buffalo River Improvement Association advocating for the dams and reservoirs. The collection is available at digitalcollections.uark.edu.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals lost on the road last night to the Corpus Christi Hooks. The Hooks defeated the Nats 8-2 in the first of a three-game series. The Nats are now 14-29 this year and will play the second game in the series tonight at Whataburger Field. The 15th-ranked Arkansas baseball team won its first game of the SEC tournament yesterday, using a walk-off wild pitch in the 10th inning to defeat Mississippi 2-1. With that win, Arkansas is now 36-19 on the season. Razorbacks continue their run through the SEC tournament later today when they take on second-seeded LSU. That tournament, of course, in Hoover, Alabama.
Tonight, expect mostly cloudy skies with a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms in the Arkansas River Valley. Overnight lows from 53 to 60. Tomorrow, a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms, otherwise partly sunny with highs in the mid to upper 70s. Tomorrow evening, mostly cloudy with lows in the mid to upper 50s. In April, Arkansas lawmakers approved plans to expand Medicaid coverage under the Affordable Care Act. The expansion will extend private insurance and Medicaid coverage to over 250,000 currently uninsured Arkansans. Many of those do not seek medical care at all, but if they do, some use free or nearly free health clinics. When Medicaid expansion goes into effect next year, thousands of people across the state will begin to carry an insurance card, and many will be able to choose which doctor they see. What effect will this have on those free health clinics? The Northwest Arkansas Free Health Center in Fayetteville, which has been in the community since 1986, serves low-income, uninsured adults. They currently do not accept Medicaid or any other insurance. They ask patients for a donation based on their income, but it's not required. In 2000, the clinic saw 2,000 patients. Last year, 13,000 patients. And the clinic moved into a new and much larger location in January of this year. John Moores is Director of Development for the Fayetteville Free Health Clinic. He does not anticipate the demand for their service to go down, saying that there are 30 to 40,000 uninsured people in Benton and Washington counties right now.
Even if you take half of those and cover them with insurance, that would still leave 15, 20,000 people out there that do not have insurance. So I think even as the Affordable Care Health Care Act rolls out over the next several years. Obviously, as that Medicaid coverage expands, there will still be people who are not yet covered by the expansion of Medicaid, so there will be uninsured for, I'm sure, the next 5 or 10 years, and the Congressional Budget Office has estimated that after the Affordable Care Act is fully implemented, there will still be 19 million uninsured adults in the U.S. There are cracks that people fall into, and I don't really see those cracks getting any smaller or being filled in with something that's going to prevent that from happening.
The center's expansion allowed them to double their capacity as far as space goes. But with just 2 paid part-time advanced practitioners on staff, all other medical staff is volunteer. Moore's biggest concern is that there are not enough medical providers in the area to serve all of these new patients.
I'm concerned that the community's ability to expand its capacity that quickly to absorb that many insured patients, it seems to me to be out of balance. So I'm concerned that we're going to have the medical providers available to take care of all these additional insured patients. The emergency room is the absolutely worst place to go if you have someplace else to go.
That concern is echoed by Tyler Clark, Community Development Manager with the Community Clinic.
Northwest Arkansas specifically is what we call a HPSA designated area, which is a healthcare provider shortage area. And what that means, for every 4,999 people, there's only one provider. So that's why it takes 2 or 3 months to get to a doctor sometimes, especially during cold and flu season. So there's a lack of providers in the area, but also of a lack of places to practice.
The community clinic is much different than the Northwest Arkansas Free Health Center. They still serve low-income individuals, but in addition to uninsured patients, they accept Medicaid and private insurance. And though they do base it on a sliding income scale, their patients are billed and held accountable for that bill, and the doctors are all paid employees. The community clinic is also a statewide organization with 7 clinics in Northwest Arkansas. Clark says that they do work with the Free Health Center.
About they serve more of a more transit population, emergent care situation when there's actually no choice whatsoever, no income whatsoever. So we work hand in hand with them. If they have referrals back to us, we refer back and forth. So it's important that the two agencies work together.
In Northwest Arkansas, the community clinic saw 30,000 patients last year with over 100,000 visits. They're projecting an increase of 7.5% as a result of the Affordable Care Act.
So that's not a large number of extra people. It is still quite a bit, but we know that there are going to be people who still don't have access because of just where they live and then just trying to get in. Right now, we get new patients in. We're taking new patients all the time, but with 30,000 patients last year, 105,000 visits, our rolls are quite full and quite busy. So,
Clark says they're trying to prepare the best they can. Their Rogers location just finished an expansion, and one is planned in Springdale, though he does say they're trying to not get too far ahead of themselves.
So now that we have more of a clear picture of knowing who is going to be included through the health exchange, we can then help our patients understand. That's another key, is helping patients understand what the Affordable Care Act means for them, what access means for them, and then how that affects our services too. If we're talking to patients, if we're going out in the community talking to people about the expansion, does it need to be in a specific area? If it's poverty level will change in the kind of area that you're in. So we've been looking at expansion for a long time, even before the Affordable Care Act was even in play.
Outreach is important, and it's part of the Medicaid expansion. The community clinic will begin in October, hiring extra staff if needed. John Moores with the NWA Free Health Center agrees that education is imperative.
Part of their responsibility is to not only enroll people in programs or explain to them what their choices are, but to actually help educate the public as to what their options might be and what's available. But you're correct that it may be impossible to reach everybody about something this detailed, this complicated, to the point where everybody understands what's happening.
Moores goes back to his point of being able to provide access to medical care. And, as we've mentioned, the numbers of uninsured, which are all of their clients, will remain high, with only about half of those falling under the new laws. But as those numbers decrease in the years ahead...
So at least if at some point, based on the need and the demand of medical services in this community, if it makes sense for us as an organization to actually consider serving Medicaid patients, we would have an obligation to consider that, to look at that strategically and say, if the community's needs are such that we need to use our expanded capacity to serve Medicaid patients, we need to examine that possibility.
So at this point, they will not be accepting Medicaid patients because the uninsured have no place else to go. But it is on their radar. For more information about the Northwest Arkansas Free Health Clinic, visit nwafreehealthcenter.org. Or Community Clinic, visit communityclinicnwa.org. This is Ozarks at Large.
Today, the University of Arkansas System Board of Trustees is scheduled to meet and vote on whether to allow permitted faculty and staff to carry concealed handguns on its campuses throughout the state. The Arkansas State University Board is also expected to vote on the matter today. The state legislature recently passed a law that allows colleges the choice, though all schools that have voted so far have opted out of allowing concealed weapons on campus. Nathan Vandiver from our content partner KUAR in Little Rock has more.
All of the chancellors in the U of A system have recommended against allowing concealed handguns, and System President Donald Bobbitt has done the same, proposing a resolution to the system board that would opt out of the law. But Representative Charlie Collins, a Republican from Fayetteville who sponsored the legislation, says he's not discouraged.
What I would say is the ship of state, much like an aircraft carrier, turns majestically and slowly in new directions.
Collins says he proposed allowing concealed weapons on college campuses as a deterrent for would-be mass shooters. He says though he sees universities opting out, the dialogue he is seeing as a result of the law is encouraging.
A lot of the people that are involved in these decisions and a lot of the universities are actually holding meetings and having discussions about a more broad topic, the security on campus. So they're coming up with different ideas and discussing different things kind of in addition to or triggered by this need to have a vote if a school wants to opt out.
Though he says his aim is to make campuses safer, many in university administrations see it as a safety risk. Ed Smith, Director of Public Safety at the University of Arkansas at Little Rock, says from a law enforcement standpoint, allowing concealed handguns on campus complicates things.
What I don't want to see is an officer be placed in a position by answering a call on campus someplace and find somebody with a weapon who is well-meaning, but just not have, you know, the officer not be able to identify him because an officer has to make a split-second decision.
UALR Chancellor Joel Anderson has said he is against guns on campus, citing complications for university police as one of his arguments. While administration has taken a stance against allowing guns on campus, views among faculty and staff are mixed, and many opinions of those on the fence are complicated. At a meeting of the UALR Staff Senate last week, representatives discussed whether they should make a recommendation to the board regarding its vote. Chuck Werninger, who works in printing services, feels that allowing concealed weapons on campus will make it a safer place.
We have a wonderful Department of Public Safety and a very fast response time, but I don't think they have the ability to protect us from every bad guy who has bad intentions. And I just don't like that the ability to protect myself has been taken away from me by my employer.
Nancy Ray of UALR's Center for Applied Studies in Education was very much on the fence about the idea of letting concealed weapons on campus. She says a mugger killed her dad, who was, at the time, a security guard licensed to carry a weapon.
When the guy put a gun to his throat and said, "Give me your wallet," and my dad reached instead into his pocket and pulled out the gun, and it cost him his life. He had every right to have a gun. The other guy didn't. The other guy's doing 50 years.
She says she knows her dad died that day because he had a gun and tried to use it instead of giving up his wallet, but acknowledges that it's hard to know if the mugger wouldn't have shot him anyway. Ray also says she thinks the more people that have guns, the more chances there are for someone to be accidentally killed.
Anybody can have a bad day, have a reaction to some medication, and their mind go south. You know, it's happened to police officers. It can happen to individuals. But do I want to be the one sitting in the room with 30 people that don't have any protection when that lunatic comes in the door? No. And would I like for somebody else in that room to have a gun? Yeah.
Ricky Turner, who works in student housing, says she's against the law, but if the university doesn't opt out, she would get a handgun and a permit to carry it.
Our faculty and staff are fantastic in general, but there are bad apples out there, and I don't know if they're going to get a concealed carry or not, and I don't know their shot. I don't know anything about them as far as any tendencies are concerned. So just for self-protection alone, yeah, I would be probably one of the first. I feel like that's where a lot of people are.
The staff senate that day decided they were too split on the idea to make a recommendation. If the U of A System Board or the Arkansas State Board opt out, the way the law was written, colleges would have to revisit that decision every year if they want to keep their campuses gun-free zones. Representative Collins says he thinks public opinion and that of university administrations will change.
Now, is that a year from now, 3 years from now, 5 years from now? I think the way it'll happen is much like early adopters with technology. One or two schools will allow the policy to go into effect, and then people will see and get comfortable and those types of things. And then once that happens, you'll start to see the pace pick up, and then there'll be a time where, you know, I believe it will just be normal here.
In Little Rock, I'm Nathan Vandiver.
Aaron Copland's Rodeo Suite, one of the most recognizable pieces of American classical music. Hi, I'm Katie Henriksen, host of Of Note, which airs the best in classical music Monday through Friday from 11 to noon on KUAF. Join me Friday for four dance episodes from Copland's Rodeo Suite, performed by the Artisphere Festival Orchestra of 2011. That's coming up on Of Note from 11 to noon Friday, right here on your source for classical music, KUAF.
With Memorial Weekend upon us, pools and aquatic centers will begin opening for the season. Saturday, a brand new aquatic center will open in Rogers. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda recently toured the facility. Here's her report.
Earlier this week, the site of the Rogers Aquatic Center was fairly quiet, save for a few whirling power tools and chirping birds. Aquatic Center manager Susie Turek says that will change soon.
I'm enjoying the quiet right now because I know Saturday chaos will ensue. Fun chaos, but chaos nonetheless.
That fun chaos will be a result of the center officially opening for business Saturday. The aquatic park is tucked away in a residential area near the middle of town, located perhaps appropriately in the shadow of two of the city's large water towers. The center occupies what used to be the site of Doc Wheeler Park. The project was funded by a 2011 bond issue. Turek started her position as center manager in January. Turek says she has a background in aquatic management, and water park management is her favorite. She says she likes the energy that guests bring.
It's happy, it's fun, people are here to enjoy it. You know, you see families together, bonding time. It's just a positive energy. Of course, it's outside, it's moving around, it's never a dull moment. But also the team of workers, the lifeguard team, I get to see them grow, evolve into self-confident mentors, leaders. They recognize what they can do for people, for the community, and they realize the littler ones that come look up to them. I remember being that kid looking up to the lifeguards when I was little, and then realizing when I was a lifeguard at 15, 16, wow, I really can make a difference in how I behave, how I act, how I interact. And I had my own role models that were, that it really affected how I became who I am now, and I'm hoping that these guards are able to do the same for others, and I think they see that.
Turek says they have 76 lifeguards on staff, as well as 25 employees who will man the kitchen and 8 people working on admissions. She says they will have about 20 lifeguards each day at any given time, keeping an eye on guests playing on the plethora of water rides. There is a family activity pool that Turek says is designed for families with kids under 48 inches tall. It's 3.5 feet deep and includes floatable play structures, basketball goals, and a volleyball net. The park also includes a lazy river that measures 500 linear feet. Other amenities include a lap pool, a rock climbing wall, and for those who are perhaps a little more adventurous and taller than 48 inches, there are a number of water slides. These include a pair of speed slides, a bowl slide, and two winding flume slides. Near a couple of the pool areas, there are a handful of white chairs to assist disabled guests.
We have four ADA lifts for people who either will have trouble getting in or getting out. We've got one at the old swimming hole, one at the lazy river, one at the lap pool, competition pool, and one at our rock climbing wall. Should we have some people who want to swim in the deeper pool, I'll show you that, but want to get in and play but may not be able to, you know, fully pull themselves out, so we can assist them in getting out.
The Aquatic Center also offers swim lessons, options for businesses to reserve the park after hours, special memberships for fitness and lap swimmers, and a chance to be a part of the Ballistic Bullfrogs summer swim team. The team name was likely inspired by the center's mascot, a frog named Wet Willie.
Wet Willie is our mascot. You'll see him on all of our tickets and shirts and signage and brochures. He's the one that welcomes everybody in. This is his oasis, and we love him because, you know, it's sort of a play on words. Every kid knows what a wet willy is, and if they get a chuckle when they hear his name, that we've done our job with Wet Willy. He's a pretty cool frog.
While the center is open to anyone, it will once again provide a nearby place for Rogers residents to swim after the lake at Atlanta Pool was closed for the 2012 season. Turk says municipalities around the country are moving toward this type of facility in order to offer something new and accommodating for its residents. She says these centers also attract guests from surrounding areas who help bring in revenue to the town. Turek says they expect to have about $500,000 in operation costs that will have to be recouped during the 11-week season.
Our challenge was to recognize that we want to offer opportunities to everyone in the area, but financially be responsible and not run in the red and be able to recoup our $500,000 operations costs in that 11 weeks. So that's really our challenge, and it's something that we'll continue to look at and tweak. You know, we want to get through this first season and see what are the trends? How are they play out? What can we expect? Because a lot of our expectations are conclusions from information that we've pulled from different parks, running numbers, just running the numbers to see what we would have to charge, trying to account for the unknowns like electricity, water costs, weather that would create problems for attendance. So there's a lot of unknowns that we're trying to factor in, but we really won't know for sure until this season's over.
The Rogers Aquatic Center is located at 1707 South 26th Street, and it officially opened Saturday. Its regular hours of operation will be from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday, and from noon to 6 p.m. on Sunday. Kids smaller than 36 inches are admitted for free. Admission prices are cheaper for Rogers residents, and there are a variety of options available, from purchasing a single entry to purchasing a 10-punch pass. The 10-punch passes are on sale at half price until 7 o'clock Saturday night. Center manager Susie Turk says admission prices are all-inclusive. There are no additional parking fees or fees for using the center's floating tubes. There is a 25-cent fee if you want to rent a locker. Admission prices are good for the entire day, so Turk says guests are able to get their hand stamped if they choose to leave the center for a while and then return later that day. More information is available at RogersAquaticCenter.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callum.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Tonight at George's Majestic Lounge, a two-for-one special. Country musician Granger Smith and his redneck alter ego Earl Dibbles Jr. will both perform during a show scheduled to begin at 9 p.m.
All right.
I know nothing about this, but Kevin Kinder, our music writer, says Smith released his 9th studio album called Dirt Road Driveway on April 16th, and tickets to the show are $10 at George's or on the website at georgesmajesticlounge.com.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Last night, the final production in the Walton Arts Center's 2012-2013 Broadway season took to the stage. Yesterday morning, a small group gathered in the center's lobby for a Broadway breakfast and the chance to meet the show's star. That's Joey, a horse, and the star of War Horse, a Tony Award-winning play based on a children's novel. Joey isn't a real live horse. Well, not really. He's a life-sized and lifelike puppet made by Handspring Puppet Company from South Africa. As Joey entered the lobby yesterday morning, Jessica Kruger, spokesperson for War Horse and the Joey team, introduced Joey to the crowd.
So this is Joey. he's our half thoroughbred, half draft horse. I guess at this point he'd be like a show jumping horse, you know, if he was around here. But at the time, during World War I, he was just a hunter. Yeah, hunter colt. Hey, buddy. So as you can see, we have three puppeteers that puppet Joey.
She calls the puppeteers the three H's, the head, the heart, and the hind. The body of the horse is made of an aluminum frame. On top of that is hand-bent cane, covered with a mesh of some sort. Joey's mane is made of Tyvek, you know, the building material, but it's dyed a brownish red. The head puppeteer is outside of the horse, his right hand inside the head, his left holding a stick that aids in guiding the movements. The other two are latched into the frame. Because Joey actually carries a rider on his back, the backbone has to be strong, which can make mimicking real-life movements tricky. The Handspring Puppet Company is all about using breath to make a puppet come alive. Rather than breathing in and out like a normal horse, or even us humans, the puppeteers breathe for Joey by moving up and down.
Puppets are always struggling to live. Right? So one of the best ways to get them to live is to get them to breathe. So what the heart puppeteer does is he just does a little bit of a plie up and down, just bends his knees up and down ever so slightly. Those of you who are close enough, you can kind of see that there's a little bit of a little breathing room here. So the cage is attached to the puppeteer. The legs are held by his hands. And then there's a little bit of a gauge. There's a little bit of, I guess, a 6-inch sort of space in which whenever he bends, the legs stay exactly where they are. And however far down he bends is about how far the horse is breathing.
Joey is capable of making just about any movement a real horse could. Walking, trotting, galloping, and rearing.
You want to really show off? You want to give him a way up? You want to give him a way up? Let's give him a way up. Ready? And way up, boy! Nice, Joe. Nice.
You may have noticed that Jessica talks to Joey as a real horse. That's one of the rules. The puppeteers wear microphones as they make all of the sounds for Joey. They have to be Joey. After showing off their skills, the three shed the cage and join the audience for a conversation. Brian Burns is the head puppeteer.
We can't be like, back up, or, oh gosh, like, see that person, or this or that. So we all have to kind of talk. We've created our own language, I guess, through suggestive movement within the horse and also breathing, different ways of breathing or prepping and things like that.
Gregory Manley is the hind for Joey. He says that he has to move and act as the hind and not the eyes, yet moving in a way to get an idea across to the eyes.
So every movement I make, I need to make sure translates up front, so that if John is eating a salad, I'm not freaking out because people are trying to touch me. Because, you know, there needs to be a unified attention in the horse.
The two, along with John Hosh, who plays the heart, make up one Joey team. There's another horse in War Horse, Topthorn. He requires his own team of three as well. In total, the traveling show has four teams. Two perform during each performance. The other two are just on hand, or they're playing other puppets within the show. The teams have been working together since the show went on the road 1 year ago, so they know each other well. Jessica Kruger also plays the hind for Joey and Topthorne. She says the first 2 weeks of rehearsal were their horse camp.
And we all got together and we were in a big room and we were given sticks from Central Park. And you know, we had to figure out where was the head of this stick and how did it breathe and what did it eat from and you know how did it communicate with the other sticks in the room. From there we moved on to paper puppets and then eventually to horses. And when we were working with the horses, we were also studying horses. So we visited several different stables within New York and we also watched a lot of YouTube videos. You know, it's an ongoing resource for us for sure. And we studied horse noises and we all laid around on our backs and just tried to imitate every kind of animal noise you could possibly imagine until we could start to figure out how to take our human voices and sort of dehumanize them a little bit.
The work paid off. Through the creativity of the puppet makers and the puppeteers, Joey comes to life. A room of about 75 grown adults, mostly, were in awe of Joey. It's obvious he's a puppet, but at 16 hands tall and at the hands of experts, he comes to life. Though the puppeteers are dressed in early 20th century riding gear in the same brown shades of Joey, they aren't trying to hide anything. That's one of the unique things about the production of War Horse. The secrets are unveiled. Jessica says the audience has to be engaged.
We are inviting you to be engaged. We are asking you, hey, we want you to believe that this cane and aluminum structure is a horse. Okay, so we're going to believe it inside the horse. The other people on stage are going to believe it and they're going to treat it as such. So come on along for our journey here, you know, join us. Believe that this is a horse, you know, and come with us on this journey. And we think that that's maybe one of the reasons that this show has been so successful is because we've asked the audience to engage and to take part. And the response has been overwhelmingly wonderful.
Yeah, I think to jump on that also, we don't try to hide anything. When you see, you know, baby Joey and you see big Joey and all these things, we're not trying to like hide everything or the mechanics of the horse. It's like we're showing you everything. And I think that gives the audience kind of the chance to be like, all right, I see what's happening and now I can forego that and invest in the story and the message of War Horse.
That was Brian Burns. Which brings us to the actual story of War Horse. It's based in World War I. As a colt, Joey belongs to a boy, but he gets taken from that boy from England to France to fight. The boy goes on a search for his horse. World War I was a great war with many technological advances. New weapons and vehicles were being used. During that war, literally hundreds of thousands of horses died. John Hawkes says that because the story is told through the point of view of the horse, it makes you a different kind of attendee, causing the audience to step back, without having to choose one side or the other, because most of us know the history already.
It gives you, I think, interestingly enough, an insight into our humanity and the way that we interact. Ultimately, I think, for me, it's a play about the way that we connect, how we communicate, the way that we interact, to see the way that this horse touches people's lives and the way that that can then channel through and the way that ripples out from life to life, the way people reach out to each other. And I think that's it. I mean, I think it's a play about contact and communication, and I think that Joey is a nice vehicle for that.
War Horse will be on stage at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville through Sunday. For more information, visit waltonartscenter.org. This is Ozarks at Large.
Someone who saw War Horse last night is with us. Jody Beznoska, Vice President of Communications at Walton Arts Center.
Hello.
So how was it?
Oh, it was amazing. Okay, full confession, theater geek, love theater, love it. It was beautiful. It was probably one of the most artistic and interesting theater pieces I've ever seen. And it was, if the crowd's reaction was any indication, I think it really touched people. It was everyone on their feet instantly. I mean, I know that's common in Northwest Arkansas, but it was really spectacular.
Runs through Sunday afternoon.
Correct. There are two shows today, actually, and then there is one show tomorrow night, two shows Saturday, and one show Sunday. And there are tickets available for all of those. I know it's Memorial Day weekend, and I'm hopeful that if you have family coming into town and you need something to do, I think you should go see it. I think it would be a case of It is a little. It's emotional. The show's emotional. It's sad. There are sad parts to it, and I know some people just don't want to be sad, but it's worth seeing purely for the artistry of it.
And that's a wrap on the Broadway season.
Yeah,
Sunday afternoon.
That'll be it for the Broadway season for the 12-13 season. Actually, next week, I believe May 31st, though, we put Jersey Boys on sale for single tickets. So right now we're just selling subscriptions, which is a great way to get tickets because it means you get a really good discount and you get the better seats because they go earlier. Once single tickets go on sale for Jersey Boys, then you can just call up and buy a pair if you want. And Jersey Boys will be September 3rd through the 8th, I believe. Next week, we'll have Scooby-Doo Live on May 28th and 29th. And that's just going to be a lot of fun. So that will be May 28th and 29th. And then I'm looking for my other flyer to try to figure out what else is happening, because lots of things are happening in May and June with the second half of, or in June with the second half of Artisphere. But before Artisphere happens, the Art of Wine Festival comes back. And that's the weekend of the 13th, 14th, and 15th. So it's the 13th annual wine festival. It's a fundraiser for us to raise money for our arts programs. And it's a massive wine tasting. It's a lot of fun. We'll talk more about it as time goes on.
I like wine.
Yes, wine is good. And then the Artisphere Festival Orchestra will be here starting June 16th. And they'll be playing at St. Paul's. Well, not the orchestra. Orchestra members will be playing at St. Paul's and Thorncrown Chapel and Cooper Chapel with quintets and small ensembles. They'll be playing at Crystal Bridges for the Solstice Day on June 22nd. They'll be playing at Arcega's for Chamber Music at the Depot. I think that's the 20th, perhaps, of June. And then they'll be doing major concerts, which I know we're going to talk lots about, including a really exciting live broadcast.
Yes. Yes.
That is going to make your lives interesting for a little while, for sure.
It will make me glad I'm not an engineer.
Yeah, no kidding. But that's coming up. It's going to come up faster than you could think. So you can get tickets to that at artistspherefestival.org. And then War Horse tickets, Scooby-Doo tickets, and any other programming that we have in June is waltonartscenter.org or 443-5600.
All right. Thank you, Jody.
Thank you.
Jody Besnoska is Vice President of Communications at Walton Arts Center.
And this is Ozarks at Large. Not that there's a shortage of concerts in our area.
Oh, no.
However, a couple more have been announced. One announced just this morning. ZZ Top coming back to Fayetteville. They'll be here Friday, October 4th at the AMP at the Washington County Fairgrounds. Tickets will go on sale a week from today at 9 a.m. Cheapest ticket, $37. Most expensive, $102 for limited premium seating. You can purchase the tickets again a week from today by calling the Walton Arts Center box office at 443-5600 or going to amptickets.com. The Hot Club of Cowtown will be in concert on Tuesday, June 11th. That's going to take place at the 324 Ballroom on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. Tickets for that show, $22. It will be a 7:30 start Tuesday, June 11th. The ballroom is right behind Jose's, and valet parking available for just $3. Western Swing, Elena James is the fiddlest for Hot Club. Interviewed her a couple years ago, and she's something else. Their new CD, by the way, Rendezvous in Rhythm, is out this week. So those concerts just announced in the last couple of days.
A new tuned-in musical sculpture park will be dedicated in Eureka Springs this Saturday at 2. More music. The first of its kind in the United States. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich visited the park on Tuesday during a rainstorm to meet the sound designer and his collection of happily drenched musicians. She brings us this preview under her umbrella.
The forested pocket park is just beautiful this morning, covered with blossoming flower beds, ancient limestone bluffs, and a chill rain-soaked mist. Even though severe thunderstorms had knocked out power and some very big trees around town just a few hours earlier, a stellar troupe of musicians turned out to perform for us on three musical sculptures, which now comprise Eureka Springs' new music park on North Main Street. Some of the musicians wore rain gear, others just didn't seem to care. Leading the pack, bundled up in a woolen jacket and a colorful skull cap, was sound designer and fabricator Renaga Farbiash. First, he shows us his 28-foot-long, 8-foot-high chime arbor, an open-air tunnel from which hang clusters of tuned silvery aluminum wind chimes. He enters from the south, reaches up, and brushes them in sequence. Give peace a chance. Hear it? Four drenched musicians next play the Renagaphone, which measures 6 feet in length and is 7 feet tall, a pentatonically tuned slit drum sculpture which pays homage to Stonehenge.
Cut into individual notes. It'll be mounted vertically in a circle, kind of like a Stonehenge arrangement, and it'll be played with mallets, and it will be tuned in the bass notes of Give Peace a Chance, so it'll harmonize with the G-Pack.
Let's introduce our musicians that will be performing.
Travis Clark.
Beth Withy.
Scott Thompson.
The third instrument is the Ozarkaphone, constructed of weatherproof pine. It's a xylophone, but it's not flat. It arcs and curves into the air.
My name is Scott Thompson. We're going to do improvised number one on the Ozarkaphone.
Hear the thunder? All three instruments are harmonically tuned to one another and are constructed with materials sourced from found and repurposed materials. Interpretation and instruction will be posted throughout the park and mallets provided. Renaga Farbiash is best known for constructing the world's largest tuned wind chime, which hangs in front of his shop, Harmonic Bazaar, from a huge oak tree located on Highway 23 south of Eureka Springs. Most notably, he installed in 2008 47 wind chimes tuned to the score of John Cage's Dream at the prestigious Walker Arts Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And this new music park project is phase one of a public art venture conceived by Sandy Martin, director of Eureka Springs Arts Council, with partial grant funding provided by the Arkansas Arts Council, Department of Arkansas Heritage.
This is part of the revitalization of North Main Street, of what we're calling the North Main Street Arts District. The phase two of the project is going to be enhancements, artistic and aesthetic enhancements of the three original instruments. As we get more funding and sponsorship for the individual instruments, we'll be able to enhance the beauty of them, the sound. Phase three of the music park is going to be adding three more instruments by other area or local artists that will complete the symphony of six musical art sculptures in the Eureka Springs Music Park.
As we talked, a trio of visitors arrived carrying trays of steaming hot coffee and fresh blueberry pancakes with syrup and butter. The neighbor across the street wished to provide stamina for the troop.
I am Susanne, the neighbor across the street. I came to figure out what is all this noise about, and I thought I'd do it with coffee and pancakes. So turn that off and let's eat.
Interview over.
But once fortified, the troupe gathered around the chime arbor for one more performance. A grand unveiling and demonstration is planned, rain or shine, this Saturday, May 25th, at North Main Street Music Park, adjacent to the old train station, at 2 p.m., with special guests, Trout Fishing in America. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
I'm Ophira Eisenberg, host of Ask Me Another, NPR's hour of puzzles, word games, and trivia. It's been 20 years since the very first text message was sent. How adept are you at deciphering texting shorthand?
NSFW.
Oh, yeah?
Not safe for work.
Not safe for work is right.
Next time on Ask Me Another, test your texting prowess in our game, Initial This. Let the games begin. TTYL.
Ask Me Another, Saturday morning at 11, right here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
The KUAF website giveaway is offering a pair of tickets to the 10th anniversary Wakarusa Music Festival, May 30th through June 2nd. The winner announced tomorrow on Ozarks at Large at noon. Additional giveaways include tickets to the country music festival Thunder on the Mountain. Separate registration for each required. Registration, but you got to hurry, available at KUAF.com. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle. And Walton Arts Center has announced that Jersey Boys will be making its Northwest Arkansas premiere in September. Broadway subscriptions now available. Jersey Boys, White Christmas, I Love Lucy, Chicago, and The Wizard of Oz all included in this package. Tickets and information available at waltonartcenter.org. Or 443-5600.
And we have a giveaway of our own announced yesterday.
Well, we told you that you could win yesterday. Mm-hmm. You have winners?
Tickets to Trout Fishing in America.
At the auditorium in downtown Eureka Springs, Saturday night.
Right. So did we give away two pair of tickets?
Two pairs.
Okay. So Gary Turner.
Yay.
And Chase Trusty of, well, I don't know where they are.
I don't either.
But they will each have a pair of tickets waiting for them at the box office at the Odd on Saturday evening for, Trout Fishing in America.
Right. And so we will email you back to let you know for sure to confirm that you are our winners. And we'll let the good folks in Eureka Springs know as well.
All right.
Congratulations.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Bentonville, Fort Smith, and Van Buren.
Van Buren. You're going to be in Van Buren today.
I am. I'm going to Van Buren this afternoon to speak with a 92-year-old man.
All right.
I believe, yeah.
Who can talk about when Bonnie and Clyde's gang was here in the region.
He was just 12 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
I mean, Bonnie and Clyde's gang. And it was I've done a story before on what happened with someone who wrote about it. Here's someone who remembers when it happened. And you'll hear that sometime.
Probably in the next week or so,
okay.
I'd say.
Well, please drive carefully.
Yes, I will.
And Antoinette Grajeda will join me tomorrow on a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. We'll give away those Wakarusa tickets. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Have a great Thursday. You're going to see Warhorse sometime soon?
I hope so. I think on Saturday.
Okay, I want to get your report on that.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.